In our study, we're now beginning the third chapter of Joshua. In this chapter, we have the account of the people passing over the mighty Jordan River. This Jordan River was the last barrier between them and actually setting foot into the promised land of Canaan itself. So in the first verse, "And Joshua rose early in the morning, and they removed from Shittim and came to Jordan, he and all the children of Israel, and lodged there before they passed over." They're getting ready to make the crossing now. And the first thing he says about Joshua is that he rose early in the morning. Now, this is repeated 3 or 4 times in the book of Joshua. So we see then that Joshua was a person who was industrious. He got up early. He didn't lay in the bed and sleep and neglect his duty. But he was a man that had his mind on the things of God, had his mind on the business that was at hand, and he was ready to get after it. He got up early in the morning. And so we find even those today who are zealous to go about and to do and to carry out the work of the Lord and the work of their life, they're going to be getting up and going after it. So he rose early in the morning, and they removed from Shittim, that's the place where they were camping, and came to Jordan, he and all the children of Israel, and lodged there before they passed over. Now here they are right on the very edge of the Jordan River itself. They are ready to pass over. They can see the mighty waters of this Jordan as it courses down through the Jordan Valley. And no doubt they're wondering just how they're going to get across. But God has promised them that they're going to do this. He has commanded them to do this. And so by their faith in God, they are undaunted. Verse 2, "And it came to pass after 3 days that the officers went through the host, and they commanded the people, saying, When you see the ark of the covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests, the Levites, bearing it, then you shall remove from your place and go after it." So the officers that passed through the host, these were those that Joshua had appointed to act as his officers among the people, to be able to direct the people to do the things that they were to do. And so they passed through the people after 3 days and began to explain to them what to do. They commanded the people, saying, "When you see the ark of the covenant of the Lord your God." Now this ark, of course, was the symbol of God's presence. It was the sign that God was with them and that he was present at that very spot, especially when the ark was connected with the mercy seat, which was the dwelling place of God. And so this ark was to go before them, and they were to follow it. And he says, "When you see the ark of the covenant of the Lord your God." Now this was a very comforting thing to know that God was in their presence. And this God, who was the God of all the universe, he was the true and the living God, the one God, he had a covenant with them. And this ark contained the covenant. This was the ark of the covenant of the Lord your God. And so what a comforting thing it is to know that we can have a covenant relationship with our God. We've made an agreement. We have an agreement that God agreed to, and that there are terms of this agreement that we can agree to and live up to, and it puts us into a state of having an agreement or a covenant with our God. We're not just left at the whims of whether or not God feels good toward us today or tomorrow or whatever. We have a covenant. We have an agreement with him. And if we live up to our terms, he will live up to his terms. And so then this is the Ark of the Covenant, because it contained the tables of the covenant, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God. And the priests, the Levites, bearing it. Now, ordinarily, the Ark was borne by the Levites, but now he actually has the priest to bury it. This is an important occasion. The priest really don't have anything more important to be doing upon this occasion than to be burying this Ark of the Covenant. It seems that now this Ark was the thing that would lead them. It was their guide. Prior to this, they'd had the pillar of fire and the cloud, but now we don't read anything about the pillar of fire and the cloud. But we read about this ark being the thing that seems to be their leader. Of course, it was the very presence of God himself. The priests now were bearing it. They picked it up by the staves and carried it. Then, he says, when you see this ark, the priests, the Levites bearing it, then you shall remove from your place and go after it. They were to follow the ark. Wherever it went, it was their leader. It was their guide. It was the thing that would take them in the paths that God wanted them to travel in. Verse 4. Yet there shall be a space between you and it, about 2,000 cubits by measure. 2,000 cubits would be 3,000 feet or about 1,000 yards. So they were not to get too close to it. They were to stay at a far enough distance where they could all see it. They would not interfere with its direction or its guidance in any kind of way. If God allowed them to come up close to it, they would probably gang around it, and only a few would be able to see it because it would be covered up by the bodies of those that were immediately surrounding it. And furthermore, they might get in the way of its guidance and direction. So they stayed back about 1,000 yards and followed it at a distance so they could all see it. And it was truly the thing that did do the leading. He says, come not near unto it, that you may know the way by which you must go. For you have not passed this way hitherto. They're going over new ground now. This is new territory for them. Of all those 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, they had not come into the land of Canaan. And so he says, you have not passed this way heretofore. They must depend upon the presence of God to guide them. They must follow the Ark of the Covenant, whichever way it went, at whatever time it went. They then were to be the followers of it. And that's very, very true for us today. As we go through this life, we have to say, in many, many regards, that we have not passed this way before. We are constantly encountering new experiences. Now, of course, the more experiences we have, the better able we are to deal with new experiences. Our new experiences may be very similar to some older experiences, but there's always going to be some kind of an experience you have not had before, something that is going to be new to you, and we always have to depend upon God to guide us. God is the guide. We can go wherever He leads us, and He leads us by His Word today. We can go wherever God has shown us to go. And so that's the way it was with them. You have not passed this way heretofore. You are covering new ground, new territory. Now, the people are not left up then to their own judgment. They are not left to use their own ideas or their own ways. They are told very plainly that they are to follow this ark. The ark is going to guide them. The ark is going to lead them. Verse 5. And Joshua said unto the people, sanctify yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. Now, they are told here to sanctify themselves. This means that they are to cleanse themselves. They are to set themselves apart for God. They are to remove from their minds, their thoughts, their actions, the cares of the world. They are now to get prepared to be unified and singly set up on this duty and this task of following the ark. God is going to lead them. Joshua says, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. Now, Joshua knew enough about the plans of the Lord to know that he was going to do wonders. He was going to bring about a great and mighty miracle or miracles. He was going to do things that these people had never seen before. He was going to do things that would truly be classified as wonders among you. Talking about becoming sanctified, or that is cleansed or set apart for a special work of God. In John 17:17, our Savior says, sanctify them through thy truth, thy word is truth. So this is the way that we have ourselves set apart, have ourselves cleansed, have ourselves made appropriate to do the work of God, through the truth of God, the truth. And of course, His word is truth. So the more of His word that we have, the better able we are to be in this state of being sanctified. And it is well for us to take some time and spend it meditating on the things of God, and to dedicate and, if necessary, rededicate our lives to the great purpose of God. Let us set ourselves apart from the world. Let us make ourselves special in that we truly are going to follow after God. And the way we do this is through His truth, through His Word. His Word is the truth. Anytime we get off the truth, we have lost our ability to be set apart for the work of God. Now in verse 6, "And Joshua spake unto the priests, saying, Take up the Ark of the Covenant, and pass over before the people. And they took up the Ark of the Covenant, and went before the people." So now we have the Ark beginning to move. It is the thing that's going to lead the people. Joshua gives the direction to the priests. They're all looking to Joshua, even the priests now, for instructions what to do. Joshua is the leader. He's the commander. He's the chief magistrate. So take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass over before the people. And so they did this. They took up the Ark and went before the people. Can you not just imagine how the people felt now? Here the Ark is beginning to move. This presence of God is going before us. It's leading us. We're getting some action now. We're actually beginning the motion toward the river. We're going toward the land of Canaan. It's moving. And so we want to move with it. We're going to keep our distance as we're told to, but yet we're going to follow it. We're not going to let it get out of our sight. And that's the way we should be today, as we today are still guided by this same God. When we see the direction in which God is going, when we see the direction that His Word guides us to take our lives, then that is the way we're to go. We have to get up and move sometimes. We have to follow God. We have to go off and leave things that are to be cast aside and things that are not really for us. And what a thrill it is, and what a sense of elation it gives us to see God move, and then we also move with Him through His Word, through His knowledge. In Numbers 10, verses 33 through 36, we have a very interesting account of when they first had this ark to lead them. And Moses gives a song here that is appropriate at this very place. "And they departed from the mount of the Lord 3 days' journey, and the ark of the covenant of the Lord went before them in the 3 days' journey to search out a resting place for them. And the cloud of the Lord was upon them by day when they went out of the camp. And it came to pass, when the ark set forward, that Moses said, Rise up, Lord, and let thine enemies be scattered, let them that hate thee flee before thee. And when it rested, he said, Return, O Lord, unto the many thousands of Israel." So when this ark began to move, Moses gave forth the song to rise up, Lord, and let thine enemies be scattered, and let them that hate thee flee before thee. So this is very appropriate as the ark begins to move now. It is going into enemy territory. It's going to conquer a country that is occupied by other nations. And so as the ark begins to move and go before the people, we can see what a thrill, what a sense of elation the people will have now, because we're actually moving. We're actually going to accomplish this thing that we've been waiting for so long. Verse 7, "And the Lord said unto Joshua, This day will I begin to magnify thee in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so will I be with thee." Now remember, the great thing that magnified Moses was when they crossed over the Red Sea. According to 1 Corinthians 10 and 12, on that occasion they were baptized unto Moses. This was the thing that if anybody was ever going to be made to believe that God was with Moses, this would be the thing that would make them a believer. Such a great and mighty miracle as this is still looked upon as a very, very great proof of the presence and power of God. And so that same thing is going to happen on this occasion. He says, "This day I will begin to magnify thee in the sight of all Israel." Israel's going to see this. They're going to know that truly, Joshua, you are the leader, that I am with you, that just as surely as I was with Moses, I will be with thee. Now, this was important for the people to know this, because they had to depend upon Joshua. Joshua was their leader. They could not turn to anybody else for comfort or solace or knowledge. They should not, because Joshua was the man who had been appointed into this place of leadership. And so God magnified him in the sight of Israel, that they may know that just as he was with Moses, he would be with Joshua. Verse 8, "And thou shalt command the priests that bear the ark of the covenant, saying, When you are come to the brink of the water of Jordan, you shall stand still in Jordan." So Joshua was to give the command of the priests. Here they picked up this ark of the covenant, and they walked toward the river with it. And then when they got to the brink of the water, here this river was on a raging torrent. It was out of its banks. There didn't seem to be any way possible that they could just pick this ark up and walk right across the river. And so he tells them, when you come to the brink of the water of Jordan, you shall stand still in Jordan. They're to stop right there at the very brink as they get right to the water. Verse 9, "And Joshua said unto the children of Israel, Come hither and hear the words of the Lord your God." Now, as we said earlier, when they sanctified themselves with truth, which would be the word of God. So now he is telling them to come here and hear the words of the Lord your God. God is speaking to Joshua, and Joshua in turn is speaking to the people. And he's addressing them now as to the instructions that God is giving. Verse 10, "And Joshua said, Hereby you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites, and the Hittites, and the Hivites, and the Perizzites, and the Girgashites, and the Amorites, and the Jebusites." Now notice what we have here. Joshua has been told by God that God is going to magnify him so that Israel will know that he's with him. And then Joshua in turn magnifies God. "Hereby you shall know that the living God is among you." So you see, the servants of God, they do not spend time magnifying themselves. They spend time magnifying God. And then God, in turn, will magnify them. Now, that's the way we should behave ourselves today. Let us spend our time magnifying God, not magnifying ourselves. God will magnify us in due time if we need to be magnified. And so it was with Joshua. God would magnify Joshua, but Joshua spent his time magnifying God. So he didn't talk about how great he was, how he was going to do this and do that. He said, "Hereby you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you." And he names these seven nations that are the prominent nations in this land of Canaan. Let us remember that these nations that inhabited the land of Canaan at this time had been given temporary possession of the land. We read in Deuteronomy 32, verse 8, "When the Most High divided to the nations their inheritance, when he separated the sons of Adam, he set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel." So when he divided this land among the people as they scattered out after the flood, he set the bounds of this nation according to the number of the children of Israel. Now, it wasn't given to Israel at that time, but he set it according to the number of them. And we read in Genesis, the 9th chapter, where Ham was the one who sinned against his father. He saw the nakedness of his father, that is, Noah, and because of that, he had a curse placed on him. Genesis 9:25, and he said, "Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants shall be unto his brother." Ham was the father of Canaan. And then we find that Canaan had 11 sons. And so there were 11 tribes or 11 families. And when you add Canaan to that, there's 12 tribes then that were allowed to inhabit this land. And consequently, we have 12 tribes then of Israel when it came time for them to take the land. And the Most High had already set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel. Way back there when Canaan and his family came in, it was really the land intended for God's people, but God let these 12 tribes of Canaan occupy this land, but he set the bounds so that it would be the right boundary for his people. And so now we read about them as they approach the land. He named 7 prominent tribes of people in this land, and the number 7 indicates completeness or entirety, showing that they're going to conquer it. God intends for them to conquer it and to entirely overrun the nations that are dwelling there. So they have a formidable task set before them, but it's not something that just happened to come up overnight and Joshua decided, let's go in and take the land, way back before there was any nation known as the true children of Israel. God had divided this land so that it would be occupied by one people, ready then for his people to come in and take over. He'd set the boundaries of it. This was in God's plan way back after the flood. And so the land was now waiting for them to take it over. And the people who occupied it were just simply temporary dwellers, so to speak. God never intended for them to permanently possess the land. And now they're fixing to be routed out by the power of God while his people come in and take the true possession. So it's interesting, as we have these 7 names given, they are names of the prominent tribes who were dwelling there, but they also indicate that the number 7 is to be driven out, and so God's people are to have entire and total possession of the land. Now, one of the sins that they did commit, and one of their great downfalls, was that they did not completely drive these people out. They tried to cohabit the land with them, and consequently, they were corrupted by the vices of these heathenistic people. Well, we're going to conclude at that point. Next time, Lord willing, we'll begin with the 11th verse. Thank you.